Well, we're seeing sort of in real time how climate change, big storms like Harvey, are impacting commercial real estate. We thought we'd talk a little bit about that today with Greg Warsek in our thought leader conversation. He's here this morning. He's the senior vice president and senior regional manager for the Chicago market for commercial real estate at Associated Bank. And Greg, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about some things that are happening in real time, if we could. We'll get into some of the other top issues plaguing commercial real estate, but the climate change is one of those ones that I think has been in everybody's the back of everybody's minds, and we're kind of seeing that play out now in Houston to a certain extent, aren't we, with what's happening down there?
Yeah, it's a great example of you know, something that the commercial real estate industry is really focused on is you know, what's the impact of global warming and you know, some of the weather fronts that occurred that, as we're seeing unfold with Houston, is, you know, how do you develop commercial real estate going forward to, you know, sort of bake in, if you will, the notion that over the next 50 to 100 years, they're expecting a fairly significant rise in the oceans and a lot of the bodies of water. So it's really going to impact most of the U.S. and, frankly, globally. But Houston is the most recent example of where there's quite a bit of development that's occurred on land that's effectively just above sea level. So when you have a weather issue like this where that amount of water comes so quickly, there's just nowhere for it to go. And obviously, the resulting devastation for that city has been pretty significant.
We're pretty lucky here in Chicago that we don't have to deal with flooding generally, but from a natural disaster standpoint, what are we looking at in Houston? Is it going to be months, years of commercial real estate out of business that'll have to be rebuilt, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it's going to be years. It's going to be similar to New Orleans. In fact, they feel that the devastation that's occurring is going to be significantly more than New Orleans. You know, there's already been quite a bit of change in building codes that have, you know, elevated how construction was done there. So hopefully that minimizes it a little bit. And what I mean by that is, you know, usually the first floors are, there's not much on them. They're elevated construction. HVA systems are elevated. Things of that nature might minimize some of the damage, but the water that they're talking about down there was much more significant than whatever they could have built around in terms of the building codes. So I think it's going to take many years for the rebuilding to occur.
In when situations of disasters like this are there lessons to be learned for other parts of the country too from what's going on down there?
I think there is. I think a lot of the Southern Bell communities that have bodies of water look at some of the things that occurred and try to learn things. I know Florida has learned a lot of lessons over the years and changed their codes to adapt. I know there was quite a few lessons learned from the real estate industry looking at New Orleans and in terms of what happened there. So a lot of what was developed in Houston was pretty recent in the last, you know, 10 to 15, 20 years. So hopefully some of, you know, the right building occurred that, like I said, hopefully will minimize some of the damage as the water recedes.
Do commercial real estate developments, do they have the same kind of flood insurance that a consumer would have, or is it a different national flood insurance?
You know, for commercial real estate, it's your typical flood insurance that you get, but there's special insurance if you're in what's called a floodplain. Mm-hmm. And there's in some of the states that are located around larger bodies of water, like the Gulf or Atlantic, have special insurance depending on where they build. And it's a complex issue, and it's getting very expensive. I know some commercial real estate developers that are even going so far as to self-insure because it's getting so expensive.
Yeah, we'll all be watching that. Hard to believe, but Houston is the fourth largest metro area, almost was the third recently. So what could happen there could happen here in a lot of respects.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about the level of confidence and the future looking for commercial real estate industry. I understand there was sort of a quarter two, quarter three outlook that's issued, and we're still seeing a lot of confidence in what's coming, aren't we?
Yeah, it's still very confident, very positive. A lot of solid fundamentals that we're seeing in the business. the market feels very healthy to me. And what I mean by that is there's a still a steady stream of loan requests from a bank perspective for construction loans, bridge loans. There seems to be a deep market for equity and other other capital in terms of permanent loans. We're experiencing fairly significant payoffs, and I would say that that's normal course of business where the completed real estate is stabilized and it's going out to permanent lenders or it's being sold, and the market seems fairly robust in terms of demand for both permanent loans and for acquisitions. So all those indicators suggest a very positive environment for commercial real estate. With that being said, there's still things in the press, you know, the current administration, mm-hmm. concerns over the political direction of the company, an unpredictable president, geopolitical with North Korea. That's creating a certain level of pause that we're seeing in the business as well.
Yeah, and I'm referring specifically to the Real Estate Roundtable's Q3 2017 Economic Sentiment Index. Still pretty high. One of the first bullet points on that is what you've just mentioned too, not only the administration, but really the lack of the expected regulatory rollbacks that we were expecting in this industry.
Yeah, I think some of that political uncertainty piece that is causing the rating and what you're referring to is it's kind of a 0 to 100, and we've been kind of hovering around 50%, and I think that's been dampened. I would have expected that number to be a little bit higher, but I think it's dampened by the political uncertainty and the fact that there was pretty high expectations after the elections based on what the new president was saying, that there would be fairly significant rollbacks and on a lot of different fronts that would create a real uptick in business, and it just hasn't happened. So I think the expectations have really been dampened.
A couple of bright spots, though, from the report. Maybe you could share whether or not the same thing's happening here in Chicago, but many of the responders who reported on the survey said that the assets in primary markets are at, in their words, peak pricing. I would imagine that's good, right?
It is. It's, as I was alluding to, when some of our customers choose to sell after the project has been completed, they are, you know, we're seeing still record low cap rates on sales. So it's peak prices. You know, if they're AA-plus assets, there's a host of bidders looking to acquire those assets. Chicago is really, and we've talked about this before, and there's a lot of foreign and coastal buyers coming into Chicago just because the coastal markets are so overheated. Prices are at levels that, frankly, don't make a lot of sense. And so you start looking at Chicago, which is, you know, a terrific market. And some of these assets, people are looking at what they see here as a relative bargain when locals are going, geez, that's a pretty nice price that they just paid for it. So it's all relative. Yeah. As we've talked about before, the level of investment that we're seeing in Chicago from outside of Chicago continues to be significant.
In addition to the coast, you mentioned foreign involvement. Is it mainly China where most of this is coming from?
You know, China was having a noticeable impact, but as you might have seen in the press recently, the Chinese government is influencing some of the companies to divest, actually, and slow down their investments in foreign countries. But the reality is that there's many others besides the Chinese that are investing in the U.S., and it may be on a direct basis. It may be through large real estate companies that are serving it as advisors, or you might not even realize that it's foreign investment because it's a fund. It's we're seeing a lot of different ways for foreign money to come into the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Back to some of the issues that could throw roadblocks up into the way, and one of them I saw from the report, in addition to the climate change that we talked about a little earlier, was this notion of generational disruption. Talk to us a little bit about that. Are we talking about the baby boomers who are now going to start retiring and they'll need more places to reside, or what are we talking about there?
Yeah, to me, that is the most interesting and compelling component of what's going on in the country right now and the impact on commercial real estate. it's not just the baby boomers, it's the millennials. That's where all the press is on the millennials. But the reality is the baby boomers are just as significant. And that article specifically highlighted the fact that those two groups make up 60% of the adult population now in the U.S. And that's compelling. We see it every day in the commercial real estate business, that group, those two groups are driving a lot of what's happening in commercial real estate today in terms of for sale housing, rental, is it urban, suburban, retail preferences, how offices are set up. It's very interesting right now to see how those two groups are actually driving a lot of what's going on in commercial real estate.
I wonder if we could talk a little bit about that. I mean, we have in the past talked about millennials and how they're impacting the office and residential. But how are the baby boomers impacting? Is it that they want different places to live? Do they want to live in cities versus the suburbs? What are the trends there?
Yeah, that one's hard to pin down because we're seeing a little bit of everything. You see, so you take your typical suburban baby boomer, they're selling their house and they're generally doing one of two things. They're moving into the town center of that town, and many times will rent, or they're moving back into the city, into Chicago. There it's a condo or rental opportunity. What we're seeing, though, is a lot more of those baby boomers rent versus buy. And, you know, instead of selling the big house in the suburbs and then buying a luxury condo, they're renting, using that capital to actually buy a nicer place in the Sun Belt. And, you know, with rising real estate taxes, a lot of the uncertainty around what's going on in the state of Illinois, I'm seeing a trend with the baby boomers, just like the millennials, to rent versus own.
And when they rent, that helps some of the commercial developments that are building some of these rental properties, right?
Exactly. Yeah. One of the noticeable trends this year that we're seeing is there was a fair amount of concern about the amount of Class A office building that was coming online in downtown Chicago. And I've talked to some local developers and leasing companies, and they're telling me that all of the units that were projected to come online this year have largely been absorbed and at pro forma prices. And existing apartment buildings have seen very little impact in terms of occupancy or their ability to raise rents still. So that's, to me, a bit surprising. Yeah. And shows you how deep that market is.
On the subject of urban, suburban living, I saw a report, too, about how office tenants, the question was posed to them, do they like the city or do they like the suburbs? And the answer was a little bit surprising.
Yeah, it's office is one of the hard ones to really pin down. I mean, one of the obvious dynamics in Chicago that you're seeing is a lot of the companies coming downtown because this is where the millennial workforce is living and is located. But there's a lot of people looking at it and saying, yeah, some of the older millennials, though, are in their 30s now, and they're starting to look, and they're having kids, they're starting to look to maybe move back out to the suburbs. Mm-hmm. So is this whole thing going to shift back out again? So some of the more forward-looking commercial real estate developers are starting to say, time to start buying suburban and retrofitting those buildings. And the focus there is well-located, mm-hmm. with sort of the urban amenities that the millennials want. In some markets, you know, they've done a really nice job with it so far. Chicago might be a little tougher because of transit. Rosemont is one market that comes to mind where they're the end of the, you know, the blue line goes out.
Right.
So we've seen that trend out there where you have what they call the suburban kind of concept, urban amenities in the suburbs.
And it's interesting you mentioned the millennials buying houses and thinking about that. I saw one report where the thing driving millennials to buy their homes are their dogs. They're moving to places where they not only can have a dog, so they're buying a house to do that, but they're moving to locations where there's a yard, and we all know where those are, right? Generally suburban.
Exactly.
Yeah. Greg, it's good talking with you as always, and we'll keep following these trends. We're getting close to your year-end predictions, so get those ready.
All right.
Greg Worsick is the Senior Regional Manager, SVP and Senior Regional Manager for the Chicago market for Commercial Real Estate at Associated Bank. We're going to pick up our conversation after the bell, and we'll post that in the podcast of the program later this morning at WGNradio.com. And remember, you can listen to all of our past conversations there and at AssociatedBank.com/thoughtleadership. It's our thought leader conversation every Thursday here on The Opening Bell.